Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Of Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, the show that we talk about musicals and everything they've taught us. Unsurprisingly, you'd never guess it from the title. I definitely didn't. My name is Julie Eisentrager, and with me at the table today I have
Miranda Selwood,
and joining us via Zoom from, let's see, like if you want to say from somewhere like weird and exotic in the world, you can take it. It's COVID, no one will ever know. But we have Timothy Wynn!
Hey, how are you guys?
Yeah, we good. Well, I'm good. I don't remember right now.
How's the weather there, Tim?
I am on the Gold Coast. I'm coming to you from the Gold Coast.
The Golden Coast.
She's golden.
Ooh. I can hear the seagulls, you know, already. This is your very first time to the hot mess that is this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a very special quiz that we like to do with all first-time guests. And then again, when they do it again, then and again, you know, we do it a bit. It is called the
Getting to Know You.
It was nice. It was nice. It was short. It was very ethel-y today, like brassy.
I think it's become just my voice.
That's your voice?
I am Ethel.
Oh, woof. Okay. My first question to you, Timothy. Which musical character would other people compare you to?
That is a great question. I think maybe like Mark from Rent.
Oh, dear.
Maybe like kind of a...
Don't take that personally. That's just Julie's distaste for the show.
That's fine. I got any character that's kind of this outsider, maybe kind of, because I guess I'm a director, so that vibe.
A director vibe.
Yeah, director vibe. Well, yeah.
Struggling artist vibe?
I mean, I don't want to get a complex about it, but sure.
In that case, which musical character would you like other people to compare you to?
I want to be in one of the famous trios, like the Little Shop Trio, or like the Character Change Trio, or like the Hairspray Trio. I want to be in one of the trios.
Yeah, I'd be with you there in the
Power Numbers. Shop trio. I think.
Good call.
Dream girls? So just you want to like be there. You want to be like Greek chorus.
And yeah, I need the support. I think if I'm ever to be on stage. I would be the Peggy of a trio, I think.
Oh.
If that kind of makes sense. So I need to...
It does make sense, but it's like, it's a self-burn there. And Peggy. All right, I'm off for the rest of the show. Bye.
No, she gets to come back as a hussy.
Yes, not as herself. What is your dream role then, Timothy?
I could do any gender.
It's a dream.
I think... I'd love to be like Hades in the Hercules.
Hercules.
Yes. I'm going a different direction.
Yes.
The public theater kind of production that they did with, I think, Chris Rodriguez. Nice. And that guy from Frozen.
Yeah, okay. I can get about that.
Good job. Roger
Bart played Hades in that production.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm gonna say yes. I want to. I don't know, but I want to.
Can we, just as a director, do you have a show that is top of your list? The dream show? I've put him on the spot. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Something that's broken. Something that's a bit problematic.
Oh, we have a list.
Oh, yeah. If you want to see us for that list, we're more than happy to jot that down for you.
But I think it's always... whatever artistic pursuit, I think there's always a little desire to do something a bit lavish. There's, you know...
Why don't you fix Gigi?
Like a secret garden-y type thing.
Love it. What is your favourite Sondheim show?
I think Assassins.
Ooh, interesting.
I still haven't seen Assassins.
Still. I don't think I've actually ever seen it either. But I've listened to the numerous recordings and
putting it out there.
There was another more recent recording, wasn't there? Has there been a recent Assassins re-recording? Am I making it up? I'm making it up. Never mind.
Putting it out there, though, if anyone wants to do Assassins, I would like to watch it. What is your go-to shower song?
I think like a Hamilton-y rap.
A Hamilton-y rap. That sounds like something you go to and order at the deli. Can I please get a Hamilton with extra sun-dried tomatoes?
Sorry, I don't want that rap. Nobody does.
Yes, it's less about my Broadway belt and more about my, what is it called? Attitude. What is the rap called? Spitting? Am I spitting or am I spinning?
I don't know.
Whatever the belt you would equivalent.
Definitely asking the two wrong ladies that question.
I know a lot about rap, Julie.
Spit a rhyme?
Bust a rhyme, I believe. I'm a girl of the 80s when busting a rhyme was a thing.
Yes.
So I'm going to go with that.
Yes. I'm owning it. I can't. I'm not a girl of the 90s.
I know all the things 80s. About rap.
Any hoozles. Okay, here's the big one. Are you ready? Mm. Are you prepped? You have to delete one musical from existence. Which one is it?
I'm going to be a little bit general and just say anything that's racist can go.
Oh, no, we lost so many musicals just then.
Unfortunately, probably
like
so.
All of Rodgers and Hammerstein is gone.
It's just gone. It's just,
oh, no.
We're entering a new era, I think.
Oh, wow.
You did say you want to take on the challenge of fixing some broken shows, though. So maybe you could just work your way through them and fix them.
With some help, maybe.
Yeah, a few rewrites.
Yeah.
It'll take a bit.
It'll take a bit.
All right. Well, we are going to move on to give us a little bit of backstory about the show that you've bought us, which is, can you tell everyone? Because I definitely can't.
Yeah, Bernarda Alba.
Bernarda Alba. All right. Let's have a little bit of music and then get on.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
All right, so confession time. Not a confession, I do say this frequently.
How far did you get through the soundtrack, Julie?
Almost all the way to the end. Yes, almost all the way to the end. I listened to about a minute's worth of every song.
Well, I listened to the whole thing, so...
Okay, but you still also don't understand the plot?
No, I did read the plot.
Okay, couldn't find the plot. So I'm going to give Timothy 2 minutes to give us an elevator pitch of the plot.
Okay.
Have we got our... handy dandy 2 minute record. What's
it called?
Timer. Thank you. 2 minute timer ready. It begins when you start.
Great. So we're in Spain. It's the 1930s. There's this guy called Antonio, and he's married to a woman called Bernarda. He is her second husband. She has one kid to a previous husband, a daughter, and then she has like four other daughters with this guy. So they're living their life. It's great. He's not like the most faithful guy. He starts having lots of affairs. He has an affair with the maid. He also has an affair with her oldest daughter. And then he dies.
Yeah, he nasty.
And that's kind of where the show starts, at his funeral. And then she takes on the role of man of the house, but is at the same time super, super suspicious of all of these men, because she just thinks they want her daughter's dowry. So she locks up all her five daughters inside their little ranch that they have, their house, and doesn't let them out. But there's this guy called Pepe, and he's going to marry the oldest daughter. but he's only marrying the oldest daughter for her money and her dowry, but is really at the same time getting off with the youngest daughter.
Aww.
There's a lot of sexual tension across the board from everyone.
Because they're all a bit into him, right?
Yeah, they're all really wanting to get break out of that house. And then they hear some screams and there's a young girl and she's just given birth to an illegitimate baby and she gets stoned. And then the next night, the neighbor comes over
That's
for dinner.
With actual stones, to clarify.
And while they're eating dinner, the mare breaks out of the stable and starts mating with a stallion in the field and they all go and they watch and then they all go to bed. And then it turns out that the youngest daughter and the eligible bachelor get discovered. And Bernardo goes out with a shotgun and shoots. And then Bernardo comes in with one of the bitter other sisters and the bitter other sister is like, he's dead. And then the youngest girl goes to her bedroom and hangs herself. And then Bernardo bursts open the doors and she's dead. And Bernardo says, everyone must think she died a virgin. End.
Oh, and that's pretty much 2 minutes.
Wow.
That's impressive. That's like, you're only like, what, 11 seconds over.
And I really enjoyed the level of detail in this plot.
Well, I didn't even get anyone's name.
You don't have to get anyone's name. We just need the gist. Because that's more than I got from the whole cast recording.
I didn't know about the little part of the backstory with second husband and eldest daughter situation.
So, full disclosure, I've actually directed the play.
Ah, here we go.
So, this is kind of why... This is why I'm doing this one.
I'm going to put it out there and I'm going to say that I think the play would be better than the musical.
That is what a lot of the reviews also said.
Well, since you mentioned it.
Just that the play in general, I think it was an experiment and he gave it a red hot crack.
Well, since you mentioned it, it might be a good segue into...
Bad Reviews with Julie.
That was a nice one. That was a good theme song. I liked it. Sarcasm. This is a review in the New York Times by Ben Brantley, written March 7th, 2006, or published March 7th, 2006. It says, sex and a monster mother seething in sunny Spain, which...
That sounds great.
For a title of a review. Good job. Good
job,
Ben.
I think that'll get people through the door, that just the title. If you read on, maybe not, but like that would be appealing.
So he says, 7 sex-starved women found festering in sealed-up mansion.
Festering?
Again, he's good with the words. Thus might a tabloid headline for a B-movie trailer sum up the house of Bernarda Alba. I think I have to scroll all the way down to the bottom. I should have done this earlier. So basically, I'm just going to sum up the review for you. He's like, it's all good. However, a bit benign. He's like, all the elements are there, but in essence, it reeks.
It's not an easy listen. I'm going to give it that. But that's a deliberate choice. Would you agree, Timothy?
Yes. So the musical is written by, here we go, I'm going to attempt to say
do it.
This.
Do it. Do it.
We're with
the
you.
The musical, is there a reason that no one's mentioned who wrote it because no one wants to
say it? Do you want me to say it? I can say it.
No, I'll say it. I looked up. So Michael John Lacusa.
Lacusa? I say Lacusa.
Lacusa. Lacusa? Yep. So he wrote, he's probably one of his most well-known shows is The Wild Party, but not The Lipper.
Yeah, The Bad Wild Party, right?
That's right. I do prefer The Lipper one myself, but I think it's really two camps there.
It's canon on this podcast that he wrote The Bad Wild Party.
Well, the thing about Lacusa is that he writes really deliberately, sort of in this dark, modernist way.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make it pleasant to listen to. And that's the big difference between the two Wild Parties. And I think this is very much like his...
When he writes, he goes to some kind of authentic musical place that connects to the subject matter. So if anybody has listened to the cast recording of Bernarda Alba, you'll hear a lot of there's a lot of percussion, and there's also a lot of like flamenco dancing that they've recorded.
Speaking of the dancing, that is actually mentioned in this review. Ms. Danielle's flamenco-ish choreography too sometimes leans towards unintentionally comic.
That is ouchy.
Yeah. I think for good old Michael John, and I'm going to like play it safe, but that's what I'm going to shorten to. I think he's kind of copped it a bit hard because he's trying to push the form forward. He was in a weird space where he was doing that and then kind of got railroaded a little bit by the likes of Lin-Manuel Miranda. And it was like, oh no, we just want rap musicals, I guess. Like, so I think now he's kind of staying off Broadway and in kind of the dark recesses of.
He's like, guys, just you can watch it, but like, shh. Don't
do that. I think that's probably where his work works best, though. Smaller scale, sort of closer and more confronting. Like, I think that's what he goes for in this kind of, he wants to create a very hyper natural, I don't really know how to say it. Like, it's really all driven by the depths of the character's emotion sort of thing.
I feel like John Cusack would maybe do a very good musical version of Pan's Labyrinth.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, that's how I see his writing.
It says here on his biography on the Wikipedia page, which, as you know, is the
trusted source of our podcast.
That he is influenced by a lot of early modern American composers, including John Corrigil. I shouldn't have started with one I can't pronounce. John Adams and Philip Glass. Philip Glass is the one who does all the really weird phase music, right? Is that the one? A lot of prepared piano and interesting sounds and rhythms.
Yeah, and he does opera, right? He writes opera.
Yeah, and I sort of feel like this sort of sits in that semi mid-century opera space.
Yeah, trying to make, I don't know, at a point where they're like, let's make opera real cool, guys.
And I think the same with Bernard Alba. I think if you like the play, or if you like the story, or if you like his musical work, or if you like flamenco dancing, then you like it.
Borderline, but I think comic flamenco dancing.
That's a series of three very niche access points.
Yes.
Okay, I found the actual quote for the review. Took a bit. The latest offering from the prolific Mr. Lacusa often feels wan and weary. The music, though superbly orchestrated by Michael Starobin and played, goes places that singers used to hard sell Broadway pizzazz cannot follow. The punctuating yelps, the wavering sustained notes in minor keys, the labyrinth interior musical paths, the eruption into anti-melodic harshness. These are all more the stuff of mid-century 20th chamber operas and conventional rather than conventional show tunes. The touchingly game performers who include musical pros like Daphne Ruben Vega. This is also why I had a slight twitch while I was listening to this guy. and Yolanda Bavin? Yeah, Bavin. Whoa. Inevitably stumble over such challenges. Twitch.
So it is more than just a vocal performance, though. It's a dance show, right?
Yeah, and I would also say, I know this is obvious, but I think it's very emotional. I think it's very actor driven. In that sense, I think whether or not the songs are bangers or not, I think it's very irrelevant to the production. I think it's about this kind of deep guttural desire and stuff coming through.
Would you say you can't really get a feel for this musical without having seen it as a whole piece?
I would say that. I don't think anyone's listening to any of these tracks on their way to work.
Mate, I was listening to them on the way home. I was like, oh, God, why?
There are a couple in there that are quite tuneful.
Yes, there was two tunefuls.
Love, Let Me Sing You. Which,
not the one I like.
Oh, but it was quite tuneful. It came in parts. And what I found interesting about that song is it has different characters singing it. And when they sing it, it sounds almost like a completely different song, but it is the same melody.
Yeah, so that song is the song of the boy, the potential groom.
Pepe.
And I think they start humming it, and it's kind of this tell when they all realize that they all have heard this same song, and that kind of they're like, oh, how do you know that song? How do you know that song? You know, it's kind of like they're smelling that his cologne on them. There.
Yeah.
I think so. Then it turns a bit dark and a bit strange as they
he done dirty. I honestly really think I would enjoy the story. Like, I think I would enjoy the play.
I don't know if enjoy is the word I would use. Like,
I would be entertained by it, not in a like bright lights and fancy feet kind of entertainment way, but like I would enjoy hearing that story.
Mm.
Like, you enjoy hearing stories from history that aren't particularly pleasant, but
Well, Federico Garcia Lorca, who wrote the play, was a young gay man, and he was a poet and a playwright, and I think he actually had an affair with Salvador Dali, but he was murdered.
We were very into the like affair with Salvador Dali, and then you threw in that, and we were both very shocked.
And whatever movie that I think there's a movie where Robert Pattinson plays Salvador Dali.
That sounds unfortunate.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, I think it's like that. But anyway, and I think Salvador Dali actually designed some of the sets for his early productions as well. Lorca wrote a lot about desire as a gay man in a very kind of conservative patriarchal world. He was, trying to figure stuff out and all that kind of stuff. And he also wrote a lot about rural Spain and kind of, you know, remote villages and being disconnected and in the country and stuff like that.
So I guess my question, because obviously I was like listening to it in the car, I was like, I hate this. I want to know what, like, is it just the fact that you had already worked on the play that kind of took you to this musical and made you like, do you actually enjoy this musical? Or
actually, it's the other way around. I listened to the musical first and then read the play after.
Oh, you're a crazy man.
I don't know. So I think, because this is quite old. It's quite a long time. Not old, but I mean, it's in like...
I'll scroll up to the top of the wiki. 36 play. Don't know when the musical came out, though. Thanks, Wikipedia.
I think it was a time where when I was first aware of Broadway and what was happening in New York theater-wise. And so I was just always like online looking for stuff. And I, as a young 15-year-old, loved Rent, as is the time.
Mate, there is a time and a place for Rent, and it is while you're a teen, but then you have to let it go.
And I moved on, so there was the connection.
Interesting jump from Rent to Bernarda Alba.
Well, because Daphne Rubin Vega. So
okay. Yes, okay. I see how you made that jump.
That's when I kind of, and then I did really, I liked the percussion and the kind of the musical style of it. I found it really interesting. And then I discovered the play, and then I discovered more of Lorca's work, like plays such as Yerma and Blood Wedding, and some of his poetry. And
Blood
then
Wedding course, sounds fun.
Quite tragic death. Because I know this is a relatively PG podcast, but for those who want to know how he died, you can Google it. And it was a death reserved for gay men, and it is not nice. No, that's a bit of a downer.
What a Debbie downer. Well, maybe we should move on to lessons we've learned. Well, I'm pulling up stuff.
What did we learn from Bernarda Alba?
Timothy, what did you learn?
Don't lock yourself up with your kids for an indefinite period of time or someone's going to get shot or die.
Yeah, well, maybe to our Victoria listeners, I'm sorry.
live and teach your kids about their bodies and what happens, and don't try and, because there's over the course of the play there is this very strong sense of religion and this kind of weird fanatical kind of Catholic, I guess, oppression.
Which is what the stoning and that character's little interlude is actually about, and leading up to that, you know, that's the same sin of her own daughters sort of thing. Yep. But that's actually really difficult to listen to, that song, when she's screaming about how she must die. So maybe there's a little lesson in like, well, just back it up a bit.
And in my head, like, because obviously I didn't know who was who in this musical at the time while I was listening to it, I was like, is that like an auntie stepping in and being like, maybe not. Maybe don't do that.
Anyway, I think I interrupted your train of thought, Timothy. I'm sorry.
No, that was it. I mean, it's bleak, so there's not a lot of hopeful lessons in it. I think I mean, she's kind of like a little bit like a Mother Courage-y type character. Like, she's so narrow-minded that one of her kids ends up dying. And
I guess the lessons you can learn from this musical, we hope you've learned before you listen to it or watch it. Like, you don't want to be learning it for the first time here.
Like, you listen to it, you say, I have gone down the right path in life.
I have made some good choices.
Unless you're listening to it and you're like, oh, I am a tyrannical matriarch, I'm going to cut that out.
Yeah.
Self-reflecting. I think I identify with the mother too much.
That's the lesson we can all learn. If you're thinking, Bernardo, she's my gal, then reassess your life.
She's my gal. Her parenting style tops.
Not exactly.
Miranda, any lessons?
Look, I actually found some really interesting musical moments in this show that were a surprise to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that as experimental theatre, this is actually one of the better shows that's been brought to us in this genre.
I do agree. Yeah. I don't hate as violently as I hate other musicals. It had some really beautiful moments of like 3-4-5 part harmony.
Yeah.
And
I think there's something in, you know, experimental, it needs to happen in steps. And this took a few steps, but it didn't go too far for me.
I don't like it when they jump to crazy straight away.
Good for me.
I think maybe I haven't necessarily learned it as a lesson, but I think this will probably lead me to the play and discovering a little bit more about the story.
About Spanish rural theatre?
Yeah, maybe. Any more lessons, Timothy? Anything else you've learned?
Bernarda is a like genuine girl's name.
Yes. Bernardo, male. Bernarda, female.
Never knew.
There's another part of it that we haven't really discussed, where there's the chief maid, I guess, in it, who is kind of the closest thing Bernarda has to a friend and confidant. But she doesn't really listen to her as much as she should, because she's Bernarda's a bit up herself. There's this very much a strong sense of all this could have been avoided if she'd listened to the help. So listen to people when they're trying to help you.
Don't people think you're better than other people. Sometimes the help can help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So genuinely surprised by that.
This is not the maid that was sleeping with her first husband, though. This is a different
maid. Wouldn't it be good if it was?
There are three maids.
Oh, dear. Anything?
Oh, there's another trio you could be in, Timothy.
The three-maid trio
of Bernarda Alba.
Absolutely.
Yeah, or the Mikado, you pick.
There's also another moment. I don't actually know if it's in the musical, but it's in the play, where a homeless woman and her child come for food and the maids go to give her food, and then Bernarda comes in and's like, get out. So I also feel that even if that's not in the musical, I just want to put that out there as a don't do that.
I honestly feel that if I was to be cast, I probably would end up as Bernarda, though.
I think I would end up as the crazy mother.
That is.
Yeah. Speaking of which, is it time?
It is time. Let's do it. Let's dreamcast this. Now, I would like Zac Efron as husband number two.
He dies right in the beginning. He's not actually in the show, so yes, this is an entirely female cast.
Correct.
If you're going to cast him in a role that isn't on stage, wouldn't you cast him as Pepe the sexy suitor?
Oh, yeah, that's a better idea. Let's cast him as Pepe.
So that's done. Good.
Tick.
Tick.
I don't know if Timothy agrees, but it's been done. It's been too late.
I'm going to let you go first, Timothy. Sorry, I was about to jump
in. It's only
polite. Yes.
Okay, so I did a little bit of homework on this because I felt it was important to get it somewhat right.
Yes,
so,
I'm very proud. Thank you.
I thought it would be interesting, first of all, for Bernarda Alba. I wondered what it would be like if Daphne Rubin Vega got like promoted up from being one of the sisters to being one of to being the mother.
Well, anything's better than Mimi and Rent, so.
What a turn for her, going from like a nightlife loving gal to like being this kind of very staunch kind of.
I actually do think that you're right, though. I think she might be time.
It's interesting. And then I thought for the chief maid, I guess her name's Poncia. I'll call her by her character name. So I thought the chief maid. She actually has a name, Poncia. I thought maybe like Eden Espinosa.
I would like to say I knew that name.
Context.
I'll Google.
She's also been in Rent, and she's kind of, she was in like Brooklyn the Musical, and she was in Wicked as Elphaba, and she was.
Yes! I know who you're talking about now.
Yeah. So I thought she would be really good. I thought for the grandmother, Maria Stefa, I thought maybe Priscilla Lopez.
Yep.
And then I thought for Martirio, who is the kind of the ugly sister, the deformed sister, Lindsay Mendez.
Oh,
from like Dog Fight, I think.
Sorry, Lindsay Mendez is what?
And Martirio is the character's name. So that was the part that Anthony Rubin Vega played.
Yes, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Which was also mentioned in some of the reviews. Like, I don't really buy her as the, in quotes, ugly duckling of the family. But
is there some kind of deformity?
Yeah.
And that's like a because is Lindsay Mendez, is she the one that's in Dog Fight?
Yeah.
Oh.
Typecasting.
Oh, well, Liza.
I did a similar thing. I'm sorry. I put America Ferrara from Ugly Betty in that role.
What is wrong with you?
It's typecasting. I'm sorry. But neither of these people, like, none of them are unattractive people.
No.
And one of the things that the character actually talks about is that, you know, she's defined by the fact that people treat her differently because of that thing. So, you know, whatever this mysterious deformity is, which I guess you could make different.
Being pretty. Being pretty is that deformity.
Well, it's all just, it's actually about comparative to her sisters. It's not that she's.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yes.
I also wanted to put in Gina Torres as the mother, just because she's a very strong character. Like, all the characters she plays are very strong and authoritarian, but usually very kind of down to earth, in a down to earth kind of way. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to see her kind of flip that and just go hard on all of that overt.
Is Rita Moreno too old to play the mother?
She could play the grandmother.
I kind of want her as the mother, though.
No, the crazy old mother. Rita Moreno.
The crazy mother that is constantly is escaping from the confines, yes, whatever cupboard she's locked in.
And getting pushed back in.
I see that as being pretty funny as Rita Moreno.
Yeah. She just wants to go and get married and live by the ocean.
Who doesn't want to go and get married and live by the ocean?
But can she do it, please, in her original costume from West Side Story? That with the, like...
The skirt?
Yes. Oh, so every time she comes out, she's like... No? I just thought that would really play into the crazy. No one's with me. It's fine.
Sorry.
I thought then for Adela, the young kind of the main, I guess, main girl, if you could kind of call her that, who was played by, I think, Nikki M. James is her name, mm-hmm, from,
yep,
Book of Mormon fame. I thought Eva Noblezada.
Mm-hmm.
As her.
I'm with you. She's quite old. No. Is she old?
Is she old?
Is she?
So these daughters are all quite of age. Like, when I was,
you can't say that when.
Well, when I was listening to it initially, I was thinking, oh, it's Little Women in Spain. Thinking they're all sort of 15 to 20 ish, but the eldest is 39, which is my age.
Yeah,
like man,
and then
the youngest is 20, so they're
not children.
No, they're not children. They're women, lady folk,
and I guess that's the difficulty is. But because Angustias, the oldest daughter, she's not really needed to look for a man because she's been having it off with her stepdad.
You know, when you're busy having it off with your stepdad, and you don't have to look for a husband. Classic.
But none of the others can get married. It's a little bit like 10 Things I Hate About You. None of the others can get married until she gets married.
Oh, I think the reference you're actually looking for is the Paper Taming of the Shrew. Yeah. But, each their own.
Any other casting opinions? Dreamer cast?
No. Is there... I'm just going to put it south there.
Okay.
No, I shouldn't.
No, don't then.
No, don't.
All right, moving. Okay. We're going to move right along to our top fives.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
What top 5 lists does Bernarda Alba belong on?
Top 5 musicals about sisters?
No, mate.
Well,
no, I'll let you have it.
Let's fill out the list.
Sure.
About Spanish country towns.
Again, you can have it. I'm going to give it to you.
Top five
you know Lacusa. What? Done.
That's good. Well, that's not hard. Sorry, Lacusa. Yes, definitely top 5 Lacusa.
Yeah.
Top 5, we did this one last week. Top 5. Well, last week it was film to stage adaptation.
This time it's play to stage.
Play to musical adaptation. Like, the plot is the same.
Oh, in terms of like a direct transfer of content?
Yes.
Sure.
It'll be My Fair Lady and then Bernarda Alba.
We don't want to put the one from last week in there?
Oh, because no, it's not that play. That was a movie. Yeah. It wasn't play. It's completely different, okay. Julie.
All right. Well, yeah, Pygmalion then.
Also, with the exception of the composer, it did have a relatively strong female creative team. I believe it was a female musical director and also a female director and choreographer, and then obviously an entirely female cast. So I think that's
good because then
notable.
You've got females telling female stories.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
I was just looking for what did we decide the year was? 2006. Yeah. Early on for that to be the case.
Yeah. And I guess, yeah, a top 5 flamenco inspired.
Yes.
Choreography?
Musicals.
Well yeah, because they use the dancing almost as percussion in the score.
I just don't see any reason to break out and dance in this score.
Well, if you've been locked up for as long as these girls have, anything.
Flamenco, not my go-to. We found out no more than an hour ago that tap dancing is my go-to.
There are a few lighter numbers in there, though. Where,
yes.
Yeah, you know, girls just dancing.
Want to have fun?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that one.
Any
more? Top five Spanish feels.
Top five shows with a horse in them.
Two horses.
Top
5 shows with a horse romance.
Yes. It's topping the list. Okay, we're really just scraping the barrel.
You know what?
No sets.
No set?
There's no real set.
Oh,
because
man, I would struggle. Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. Is this one act or three acts? It depends which way you look. It's one, right? It plays without an interval.
Yeah, like it goes for 90 minutes.
Oof. Top five one-act Spanish. I like you have to throw Spanish in there. Okay, we are just going to move right along. Timothy, is there anything you'd like to plug? Have you got anything coming up?
Yeah, sure. I'm actually directing two productions at the moment. One is Romeo and Juliet, which I've kind of worked on a new adaption for a group of young people on the Gold Coast at Technicolor Theatre Company. And I'm also, for the company of which I'm the artistic director, that production company, I'm in the middle of directing a production of Cozzy by Louis Nara.
Cool, cool. I've seen Cozzy. I love a play. Like, I'm going to put it out there, guys. I love a play. Probably we'll see both of these shows. Oh, wait, no. Are they sold out is my next question.
Cozzy is sold out at the moment.
We'll be seeing Cozzy then.
But
more shows.
We may kind of look into some kind of extension or, you know, COVID's tough managing COVID with,
yes,
you know, audience capacity and things like that. So we'll see what we could do. But I would definitely like that production company Facebook page to stay up to date.
Way ahead of you. So
we announce more shows or something.
Our listeners, so what's the actual handle for it? That production company?
That production company.
Check them out on Facebook. Are you guys on Instagram as well?
We are for that production company as well.
Amazing. Anything else?
No, that's it.
That's a wrap. That's a wrap on Timothy Wynn.
Hey!
It's like I'm a film person, guys.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us and bringing us a very obscure musical. Didn't know it existed until I got the link for it. Thank you to my co-host Miranda.
You're welcome.
Producer Zane, who's pushing the buttons. And until next time, we'll see you later.
Bye.
Hello and welcome to an advertisement for the Penny Peep Show. What is the Penny Peep Show? Well, in our podcast factory, our podcast scientists have been working hard on a range of light-hearted radio play anthology series that everyone can enjoy.
Criminy Cricket, spokesperson! Is there a light-hearted radio play anthology series for me?
No, every series is marked explicit. But why not tell your parents, nameless child? They'll find the Penny Peep Show wherever good podcasts are stocked. The Penny Peep Show. It's like dissolving your ears in a cocaine-laden off-brand soda.
Is that a good thing?
Shut up, nameless child.